Happy Friday, everyone. It's the Bill Buckmaster Show. As you can tell, I'm not Bill. Bill's on vacation. I'm Tim Steller, columnist with the Arizona Daily Star, frequent Friday guest, today a Friday host. Today I will be joined in the studio by my colleague Ellie Wolf, reporter covering higher education for the Star, and the chair of the University of Arizona Faculty Senate, Layla Hudson, a professor at the U of A. But before we get to that, we want to get some news from Bill, who's between trips, I believe, and has some news from regarding one of his frequent guests. Bill,
hey, Tim,
you there?
Sad news. Retired four-star general John Wickham Jr., who served as the United States Army Chief of Staff from 1983 to 1987, died this week, 1 month short of his 96th birthday, died at his home in Oro Valley at Splendido. He was a dear friend to this radio program, appearing every month for about 10 years. And before that, during my 22 years on Arizona Illustrated, he was a frequent guest on the program, and just a wonderful man. An amazing career. I just want to take a moment to talk a little bit about it. General Wickham was Commander-in-Chief of the UN Command and Commander of the United States Forces in Korea and the 8th Army in Korea. He was critically wounded in Vietnam, and he told me that story numerous times about on the battlefield. He was really badly wounded, and he insisted that all of his men be air-vaced out before he received medical treatment, and he was the last one to be air-vaced out. And he spent over a year in the hospital.
Oh my gosh.
Recovering. Yeah, and he returned to Vietnam, where he was responsible for negotiating the release of all of the prisoners of war, a huge responsibility. He loved West Point. He was a 1950 graduate of the Point, and he his final resting place will be there, and I'm sure there'll be all the honors due him. General Wickham retired in 1987. He had four decades in the service of the Army. The Army Times called him one of the most influential leaders who changed the Army. He had many decorations, twice awarded the Silver Star for battlefield valor, Bronze Star for valor, Purple Heart, 11 Air Medals, 4 Legions of Merit, 8 Distinguished Service Medals, and 21 foreign decorations. And finally, I was honored to call him a dear friend, and I look to him as a mentor. And I'm very sad that he's gone, but he certainly will be remembered. What an amazing career.
Well, thank you, Bill, and our condolences to General Wickham's family.
Thank you very much, Tim, and have a great show.
Okay, take care.
Thank you.
So as you all know from Bill, this is the Buckmaster Show, broadcasting from the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio on the campus of Bustos Media, as he likes to call it. Five stations hosted here. The Buckmaster Live Line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. We can have some calls later if you feel like it. As I mentioned, our guest today is the chair of the UA Faculty Senate, Layla Hudson, and my colleague at the newspaper, and in talking with her is reporter Ellie Wolf, who came on not even a year ago and has had a heck of a time covering all kinds of things at the University of Arizona since she got here. But there's, I think, a natural question. I hate to be too basic here, but Professor Hudson, what is the UA Faculty Senate, and what does it mean? Why does it matter that there's a Faculty Senate and a chair, which is you? I mean, what does this all add up to? Anything?
Well, first of all, a minor correction. I'm not actually the chair of the Faculty Senate.
Okay, sorry.
I'm the elected chair of the faculty, which makes me a little bit more like the executive officer, the chief executive officer, if you will, to use a corporate parlance, of the faculty. And my dear friend and colleague Mona Emel, who you may have seen running the Senate meetings, is technically the chair of the faculty.
Oh,
Senate.
Okay. I see how that works now. So you're chair of the faculty,
yeah,
which is represented as a body by the Senate. Is that how that works?
Actually, yeah. So I'm an ex officio member of the Senate, just like the president and several other positions are represented in the Senate. But I am not the chief or presiding officer of the Senate. I participate along with our several dozen other senators.
Okay. And so in doing so, you're holding meetings all the time,
yeah.
and it's it appears that you're kind of helping run the university. Is that right? I mean, do you have some role in running the university, or is it kind of like a student government or something?
Well, this is very interesting, and this is what we are currently negotiating right now. So traditionally, American universities have been run and governed by the faculty, acting in these democratic workplace forums, like the Senate, and we're no exception to that. The state of Arizona is actually a little bit different, because the role of the faculty is enshrined in statute, in the Arizona Revised Statute. So we have an explicit statutory obligation as the elected representatives of the faculty of the three universities to play an active role in university affairs. And that's what we do, right? So the faculty have delegated power from the Board of Regents and from the president of the university to basically oversee all matters pertaining to our work, namely curriculum and academic personnel. But the statute also requires us to participate actively in governance and policymaking. So when you see me playing that role, and you see my other elected colleagues playing that role at the university, we are fulfilling that statutory obligation. And it acts as a kind of set of checks and balances on the university administration, who, unlike us, are well compensated and have a fiduciary obligation to run the university. But when it goes off the tracks, we're there to ask questions and try and get it back on track.
Okay. I should bring in my colleague, Ellie Wolf. As I mentioned, she started, when did you start covering the U of A and higher education here?
I started the first week of October.
And when was that famous presentation by President Robbins, Bobby Robbins, president of the UA, to the Regents, noting that there was a little financial problem at the U of A?
It was the first week of November, so I had been here for about a month.
For a month, okay, mm-hmm. Yeah, and then it just got crazier after that.
Yeah.
Well, why don't you take it away and go ahead. I know you've interviewed Professor Hudson many times over these months, but go ahead.
So you've spoken a lot about the importance of shared governance, and we know that there was a bill introduced in the House earlier this year trying to limit the role of shared governance, and the Arizona Board of Regents and University President Robbins have said that they are neutral about the bill. And so I'm curious, you know, what do you think about that? Do you think that they're, in a way, by being neutral, trying to attack or diminish shared governance?
Well, the faculty, let me put it this way, is not neutral on that bill. And as you might recall, at the last faculty Senate meeting, we voted overwhelmingly, if not unanimously, to state our opposition to that legislation that would legislate away the traditional role of the faculty. And so in doing so, we join our colleagues at Arizona State University and Northern Arizona University, who had already made their position, the same position, of opposition to this bill, very clear. So many of us were a little puzzled as to why a university president and board of regents would take what amounts to a radical stand of neutrality that might facilitate the elimination of the traditional role of the faculty. We were disappointed by that, and we as the Senate differed from that and made our views clear in the May 6th Faculty Senate meeting. One of the issues that I would like to emphasize is that faculty governance is a stabilizing, even a conservative force in the governance of a university. And so while popular parlance makes us out to be ungovernable and radical as faculty and employees of the university, actually the bulk of our work involves sticking to traditional, time-tested academic values and preventing the kind of radical risk-taking that our administration has engaged in over the last couple of years.
So, but that didn't, obviously you didn't have a chance to prevent whatever risk-taking led to this current financial crisis, or you, or somehow it didn't happen.
No, yeah. We don't have that power, nor do we have that mandate, nor do we have the oversight of financial matters.
So maybe you can update us, Ellie. What was their reasoning, the legislators' reasoning about why they wanted to eliminate minimize the role of the faculty in governing the university?
They actually blamed a lot of the issues on the faculty. And what we were seeing was a very conservative state representative pushing this legislation forward because, as he said, left-wing faculty were sort of taking over the university.
Yeah, and of course, nothing could be further from the truth. In fact, because we don't have, one thing the Faculty Senate does not have is the power of the purse. We'd love to have it in a perfect universe, and that way we could actually control the spending. But in fact, it was the opposite. We had an administration that did not have good control over spending, did not know what was coming in and what was going out, and did not have good impulse control vis-a-vis their wishful thinking about what this university could be, all things to all people in the future. So in that scenario, the legislation was being pushed and driven by people who didn't have very good insight into the actual dynamics of the University of Arizona. And again, even though it runs counter to conventional wisdom and popular discourse, the investment in faculty-led shared governance is a stabilizing force. It's a conservative force. It keeps our university on track, not too volatile, making incremental low-level decisions about how to invest in our academic mission and our community, and preventing, in theory, or at least providing checks and balances on the impulse to spend and gamble like a venture capitalist, which was an impulse that we sadly saw take hold in the culture of administration over the last few years.
We now know that Bobby Robbins is not going to be president much longer. It's not clear till when he will be president, but he said he's not going to serve past the end of his contract. I can't remember. Did you all ever take a stand and say we want him to be fired or to leave or something like that?
Well, the vote of no confidence that has been agitated for over and over and over, especially this last year, it's a pretty blunt instrument. And as you recall, this time last year, we already did a vote of no confidence on President Robbins based on his handling or mishandling, as many felt, of the entire public safety issue stemming from the murder of Professor Meixner. So we had already done a vote of no confidence, and I was hesitant to mobilize that instrument again. And ultimately, we didn't need to because the conversations and the issues were being manifested in other ways.
And so now we're in a presidential search situation. I don't know. It sounds like they know they want to get president, but they don't. Do they have a timeline? Do we know what's up with that?
So they don't have a timeline. President Robbins said he would step down by the latest at the end of his contract, which is June 2026. But he said he would step down earlier if the Arizona Board of Regents found a candidate who accepted and they liked and was suitable. And right now, the Presidential Search Advisory Committee, which is made up of some faculty, a staff member, a student, some community members, and administrators, they've been meeting and they're working on drafting up a position profile. An executive search firm has been hired, SP&A Executive Search Firm. They were behind the presidential search for Northern Arizona University. But in the past, what the regents have said is, you know, they're willing to move quickly if the right candidate comes forward.
Mm-hmm. You have any insight or are you involved in this process?
Well, that's my understanding as well. And I think behind the scenes, there is an interest in having this interregnum be as short as possible. So I think time is of the essence and everyone involved in the process understands that. Now, that being said, we want to get it right. We don't want to do it quickly just for the sake of doing it quickly. So there is a lot of push to find the right person as quickly as possible. As you may know, I was disappointed that ABOR did not engage directly with me and the other elected representatives of the faculty in the composition of the search committee. That was a disappointment and probably a misstep, but we're not looking backwards. We're looking forward. And so we have all in the Senate and in all the other elected faculty governance
structures,
along with the staff, along with the students, participated and tried to communicate well with the committee as it currently exists.
All right. Thank you, Professor Layla Hudson, Chair of the UA Faculty Senate. We're going to wind down this segment. This portion of the Buckmaster Show is presented by Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle. Mona's is located on the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise in the beautiful Catalina foothills. Mona's is open Tuesday through Sunday for breakfast and lunch, now serving alcohol, such as your favorite mimosa, if you wish. Treat yourself to their mouth-watering pastries, including the famous Danish Kringle, monasdanishbakery.com or buckmastershow.com. Go there for a link to Mona's Danish Bakery.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is finalizing a new 20-year plan for RTA board review and approval to seek public feedback on the draft plan. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. And your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
We're back on the Bill Buckmaster Show. Hope everyone's doing well on this beautiful Friday afternoon. It's Tim Steller in for the vacationing Bill Buckmaster. I'm a columnist at the Arizona Daily Star. I'm here with my colleague, Ellie Wolf, who covers higher education. And she's here because we are interviewing, I misstated this before, the chair of the UA faculty, chair of the University of Arizona faculty, Professor Layla Hudson. You know, I never asked you, I think we should put it out there just to get it on the record. What is your department and specialty, if you would just let us know?
Sure. I am an anthropologist and a historian by training, mm-hmm. and I work in the School of Middle Eastern and North African Studies at the mm-hmm. University of Arizona. Soon to be part of the new School of Global Studies at the University of Arizona.
Okay, that's how that works. we were talking between segments here about the financials. I mean, why don't you pick this up, Ellie? I have no I can't keep up with everything that Ellie writes. There's once I take a break once a week, and I search on Ellie Wolf on our website, Tucson.com, and I go back and, okay, those 10 stories that she's written since I last caught up. Anyway, why don't you take it away and ask about this financial situation, Ellie?
Yeah, so a little bit of a refresher for listeners. In last November, the university announced that they were in a financial crisis. It was revealed, I believe, in January that they were facing a deficit of $177 million. Right now, they've cut that down to $162 million. And the projected deficit for next year is $52 million, I believe. Mm-hmm. So, Dr. Hudson, I'm curious, you know, we're now in summer break. I think a lot of faculty I know are off doing work and research. So I'm curious about if there's any plans for faculty senate oversight during the summer, because administrators like the interim CFO, John Arnold, will still be cooking away, making plans. And we already know that there are going to be layoffs in the writing program and in the math department. So what can the Faculty Senate do, and what is the Faculty Senate doing?
Well, as you correctly stated, the summer is the time for the administration to do things that would be more difficult to do with most of the faculty present and attentive. So it's typically a time when the Senate doesn't meet. The best that we can do is to continue to watch, to collect information. So yesterday we just sent out a survey to try and even get a good idea about the non-renewals of faculty that are happening across campus, across our 22 different colleges. And because of the decentralized structure of the university, and because of the parsimonious nature of the administration with the information that we seek, we don't have a good handle on this. So we are surveying the different departments and colleges to try and get our own numbers on faculty non-renewals and dismissals. And, you know, it's more adversarial than it needs to be, because we don't get the information from the administration in the form that we ask for it in a timely manner. Now, again, we have very little power to do anything about this, but our power starts with knowing what is happening.
Just before you continue, Ellie, if listeners want to call in, the Buckmaster Live Line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management, is 520-790-2040. Again, we're here with Professor Layla Hudson, the chair of the University of Arizona faculty, and my colleague Ellie Wolf of the Arizona Daily Star. Go ahead, Ellie.
Yeah, so with these career track faculty seeing layoffs, I'm curious what you think. You know, will students be seeing bigger class sizes, especially for those introductory classes? Will tenured professors have to drop some of their research responsibilities and teach more? How will this affect the students?
Yeah, the short answer is yes and yes, that when we continue to emphasize getting more and more students, and we don't keep up with the number of faculty and staff necessary to teach and support those students, it absolutely will affect the student experience. Now, the way to turn that around is for us to be on top of that and to counter it and to make sure that going forward, we do not put penny pinching of tiny amounts of money that will be recouped from the termination, effective termination of our colleagues, when in fact the big ticket items are still out there.
What do you mean by big ticket items?
Well, our relationship with the struggling athletic program and other strategic ventures and investments that have been made, which have not been subjected to the same cost-cutting measures as quickly and as enthusiastically as the academic side of the house. And what I keep saying is, do not strip the engines of the university. By that, I mean the faculty who run our academic mission and the staff, even more numerous, who keep the institution running smoothly. Do not try and take your savings from those places while letting the big ticket items keep up their old bad habits of overspending. That's where the tens of millions went, not to the salaries of our colleagues.
So speaking of athletics, we're expecting to see a report from outside consultant group Ernst & Young about athletics and the University of Arizona Global Campus Project. We're expecting to see that. We're supposed to see it mid-May. So stay tuned for an article in the Arizona Daily Star. Who knows when that'll be. But what do you, this is a two-folded question, kind of what do you expect to see from the report and what would you like to see in the report?
Well, I'll just point out that we have asked over and over and over again to know what Ernst & Young were contracted to do, what the charge as well as the cost of their contract was, and that information has not been shared with us and not been forthcoming. But at the very least, I would like to see a professional and competent accounting skills of a global powerhouse like Ernst & Young dedicated to untangling the confusion so that we can proceed to get our priorities straight and hopefully repay the so-called internal loan of at least $87 million in which the academic side of the house, the thousands and thousands of underpaid academic faculty and staff who have been subsidizing an athletic program that we don't fully understand the economics of.
Could you just explain that a little more basically? The $87 million, what is that?
One of the things that we discovered back in November and December of last year as we dug into the finances of the university was that the athletic department was in the black, but only because of the transfer of $87 million, at least, might be $102, it might be $106 million, which is why we want the accountants there to help us with this. But one thing that is not in dispute is that the academic side of the house had basically opened up a vein and was subsidizing the athletic side of the house. And so while we all value the athletic program for all the reasons. It builds community. It is so important to our economy and
identity,
to our spirit.
Fun, yeah,
it's fun. It gives an identity. And certainly not least, it is an important vehicle of social mobility for our student athletes, right? So for all these reasons, no one's talking about eviscerating athletics. It's a clear part of our culture. And yet there needs to be the kind of accountability as to just who is subsidizing whom. For many years, we were told, and we believed naively, that athletics, with its ticket sales and popularity, was subsidizing the academic side. Well, it turns out that was not true. Mm-hmm. The opposite was true. And so we first need a good accounting, and then we need a good mechanism. One of the things that I've asked for is the externalization of that loan so that there would be terms for repayment of that loan. As it is, they're like, oh, well, it's just like taking money from one pocket and putting it into the other. I'm like, that's not good enough.
Mm-hmm. I think we should maybe take this opportunity to go to the next break. This is the Bill Buckmaster Show, broadcasting from the Green Things Zocalo Village studio. I'm Tim Steller, subbing in for Bill, here with Professor Layla Hudson, chair of the UA faculty, and my colleague, Ellie Wolf. Thank you.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
On the Bill Buckmaster Show. No, I'm not Bill. This is Tim Steller, Metro columnist at the Arizona Daily Star. Bill's on vacation. I'm here in the studio with Professor Layla Hudson, the chair of the UA faculty, and my colleague Ellie Wolf of the Arizona Daily Star, who covers higher education for us and has had a very busy winter ever since the financial crash came upon the university in November. That wasn't the only... I mean, you would think there was enough drama between the financial situation and then the presidential search. But of course, now at the U of A, as across the country, protests have erupted is this traditional word, but let's just say have happened relating to the war in Gaza and related issues. Professor Hudson, I mean, so there have been, I believe, several protests, but then a couple of encampments and a couple of police clashes. What do you think about what's happened and how it's been handled by the university?
Well, as you mentioned, this is something that is sweeping the college campuses of the country. And as we look at that comparison group, I am optimistic that the University of Arizona in particular will continue to be to have lines of communication open that prevent the kind of chaos that we've seen in the different bi-coastal universities this mm-hmm. spring. So while the situation is still contentious and still challenging and still difficult, the faculty do have lines of communication that we have developed with Vice President for Campus Security, Steve Patterson, through all the work that we have done since Professor Meixner's murder mm-hmm. in October 2022. So we are perhaps more plugged in to the security branch of our administration than other universities. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, we have a deep bench of expertise on the Middle East and on global geopolitics generally, so that our students are well informed, our community is engaged, and compared to the chaos that we have seen erupting at other campuses, I hope that the University of Arizona will complete this cycle by being a national leader in how we negotiate out different positions on these contentious and challenging matters.
Mm. I recall a few weeks ago, Ellie and I, along with our colleague Mumta Popat, who's a photographer, we were on campus, and there was I guess you'd call it pro-Palestinian demonstration march. And I wrote a column afterward. We did some videos. That sort of, it was. I don't want to insult it by calling it tame, but it was totally, you know, it was what you expect. And I wrote a column thinking, hey, this worked out well. This situation is, if people keep doing what they're doing, it's going to work out here at the U of A campus. But I'm sure Ellie can tell us, she's spent, I think, two nights monitoring camps that were later put up. Maybe you could just spell out for us, Ellie, how that developed and why that turned into a actual physical conflict.
Mm-hmm. So there were two nights of encampments. The first night was maybe 3 weeks ago. Time is moving weird for me lately because of everything. But it was organized by a student group, Students Against Apartheid. And initially there was thoughts of an encampment on a night, I think, in late April, and the students actually chose to pack up and leave. They did not want to get arrested. They were originally on the mall, packed up, left. The next day, the university actually walled the mall off with fences, you know, no trespassing signs. And then a little bit later, the first formal encampment began. I think that was the next day.
Was it on the mall?
No, so the second encampment where there were arrests, this mm-hmm. was kind of the first police clash, that happened at the Olive Grove, which is right by Main Gate, right on Park Ave.
Okay.
And what I would say about both encampments is that there were, you know, police presence. Students were shot with rubber bullets, pepper balls. The second night, there was the use of tear gas and other chemical munitions. So while we can't say that everyone in the encampment was a student, there were some outside pro-Palestinian Tucsonans. Mm-hmm. There were students in there. And the second night, right? And something I'm actually curious about Dr. Hudson's opinion on is, so at the final encampment, there was actually a group of faculty who are under a new group called Keeping Students Safe, and they kind of formed a line between the encampment and a large line of police and SWAT officers. And they were chanting, you know, this is a peaceful protest. And what we know is that last week at that encampment, there were two arrests of faculty members, and the university wouldn't say whether those faculty members would be facing any kind of discipline for their actions. So I guess I'm curious, Dr. Hudson, because in many ways you speak for the faculty, you know, you're elected chair of the faculty, what you think about that?
Well, let me just say that the students and the community members who are engaging in this peaceful tradition of assembly and speech based on their conscience are following in a very long tradition that has been critical in the civil rights movement, in getting us out of Vietnam, and getting us in persuading universities to divest from South African apartheid in the 1980s and 90s, and so are working in a well-tested and effective tradition on university campuses, and that's important to note. So when we see the use of tear gas and other chemical agents and rubber bullets, which can cause serious, if not lethal, injury, that is very disturbing. And that is what has inspired this group of faculty whose experience as faculty stretches back to the 90s and the 80s, who have participated in effective civil disobedience actions of their own, have been motivated to come out to protect the students who might be engaging in some of their first or early civil disobedience actions in the course of their lives and their careers. So again, I think this is a good development. I'm not going to talk about the case of the two faculty members who were arrested, because we are still working on that and negotiating about that. But my role as chair of the faculty is to emphasize that in spite of the lack of trust on campus, in spite of radically different positions that different members of our campus community hold, we need to live together. We need to live together peacefully. And we need to respect those traditions and actions of speech and protest. That does not mean accepting outside forces that agitate and bring violence. And it also means we need to be really careful about the deployment of police and institutional violence against people protesting peacefully based on their conscience and a well-understood tradition of civil disobedience.
Is it not, though, I kind of see this two ways. On the one hand, it is a well-worn tradition, as you say, student protests and camps, student protest camps, student occupations of buildings. On the other hand, all across the country, it seems like the university administration set a red line, which was they didn't want camps.
Right.
And that happened here, and then people did it anyway. And so, you know, a clash was right. The result. Well, I mean, is it defensible that they said no camps, but you can do whatever else you want?
Well,
The
point of civil disobedience is to draw attention to the issues that the establishment, whether it's government or the institution of a university, is preferring not to address head on. So that's where the civil disobedience comes in. As long as it's nonviolent, the point is to disrupt. Okay, so that is something that most of us who have been around universities for a long time are used to. We understand how to deal with it, and we sort of negotiate it out. The campuses that I would like us to be among and a leader of that you don't hear so much about are those that have listened to the protesters.
There have been some. Yeah.
Yes, there have been some, and they don't make the news. And that's That's how we would like our campus to be, where these discussions about the student and community and faculty and staff concerns are taken inside, taken to the table, and discussed in a respectful, internal, civil debate manner. That's what we're aiming for.
So we're getting short on time. I didn't want to leave before we without asking you about the anti-Semitism resolution that came to the faculty or faculty senate. As I recall, and Elliot will correct me if I'm wrong, a resolution against anti-Semitism was brought to the faculty, and then you decided to push it off to a committee.
Let me fill you in on what happened. Okay. This whole incident and how it has played out over the last week is a sign of how much we need to rebuild trust in each other on the University of Arizona campus. In fact, the resolution was brought by me and put on the agenda of the Senate back in early to mid-April, right after the defacement of property belonging to a fraternity known as, quote, the Jewish fraternity. So with a group of concerned faculty, we came up with a resolution that tried to move beyond the easy part, that is a symbolic denunciation of anti-Semitism and all related forms of hatred, to try and create a system for documenting crimes that threaten people based on identity so that we can monitor, document, investigate, and investigate the university's failure to investigate or deal with these incidents that may or may not rise to the level of a hate crime. Circumstances, including the police action at the encampments, caused me to take another look at the language and to sort of say, well, let's get a resolution that we can actually enforce, that we can do properly, and that doesn't threaten to increase with our encouragement, police violence against protests. And the fact that so many people took that delay as evidence of a anti-Semitism is a sign of how much work there is to do in rebuilding trust on campus.
Well, thank you so much. We're going to have to wrap this up. That's Professor Layla Hudson, chair of the UA Faculty Senate. She's been joined here today by Ellie Wolf, my colleague at the Arizona Daily Star. Thanks so much for showing up here and doing this interview. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
In the next segment, we'll go on to Weekend Watch with Weekend Watch host Dan Gibson.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation improvements in the region, averaging more than $100 million in tax revenue each year. The RTA is preparing a new 20-year plan for public review prior to a May 2025 election. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in Southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them,
as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com. This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
We're back on the Bill Buckmaster Show. It is Friday. That means it's Weekend Watch Day. This segment is sponsored by our friends over in Silver City and Grant County. They are ready to welcome you back with open arms. Just 3 hours east of Tucson, there is so much to do in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico, including hiking in the Gila National Wilderness, where there is plenty of social distancing, and visiting the world-famous Cliff Dwellings National Monument. For a complete listing of the many things to do and the great places to stay, visit southwestnewmexico.org. We are back here with our Weekend Watch host, Dan Gibson. Dan, how's it going?
Good. How are you, Tim?
I'm doing pretty well. How's the? It feels like summer is finally arriving. What does that mean as far as things to do in Tucson?
You are starting to see the end of the outdoor events, or at least the early evening or daytime outdoor events. So it's changing a little bit. But if you want to get outside, you want to have a good time. I know Bill has an ad in that previous segment about the zoo. It's Brew at the Zoo time tomorrow at 6:30 p.m. at Reed Park Zoo. So what a coincidence, paying that off for his advertiser, apparently. did not know, unprepared.
Yeah.
It's a selection of craft beer, ciders, lagers, ales from all over Arizona, and you can travel around the zoo. There's live music in their event garden, games, photo opportunities. You could take home a commemorative tasting glass. Just go to their website at reedparkzoo.org, and you can buy tickets there.
I'm glad you mentioned ciders, just to interrupt for a second, because, you know, yeah. I have gotten into ciders lately. I think we're talking about alcoholic ciders here, obviously, and they're a good, especially when it's hot out, it's a decent replacement for beer. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, like a little sessionable thing. You don't feel so, like, overwhelmed.
Yes, exactly. Bit of sweetness.
Have you been to Bocker Cider on 4th Avenue?
I have not yet. I'll go there as soon as I have a chance. That's a good idea.
You should. Check that out. Yep. Back to beer, much to Tim's dismay. Pueblo Vita is having a 520 day party. I almost said 420.
That would be the wrong substance.
Absolutely wrong thing for this occasion. 520, you know, celebrating the Southern Arizona's area code.
All right.
It's like a sort of a regional celebration there. They've had a third annual event. They brew a special beer for it. It's a IPA this year. They have an all-day happy hour from 3 to 9 p.m. and a limited edition 520 day merch. Weirdly enough, I'm wearing one of the previous 520 day merch shirts today. It is also my birthday, so it's a nice coincidence for me is that they're throwing a party for me.
And so that's a Monday, right?
Different...
Or is that?
Yeah, that's Monday.
Okay.
Yeah. Entirely different. Something to offer, just mix it up a little bit. Tonight at 7:30 p.m. at the screening room, they are having a screening of the Roger Corman film, A Bucket of Blood. It's a B-movie classic. Roger Corman passed away a few, I think a week ago, but was also super influential, is a B-movie director, the star of all B-movie directors, but also gave people like George Lucas and Steven Spielberg their starts. So sort of a great hierarchy, a great filmmaker working in the not great film milieu.
Yeah. I imagine it being a slasher movie or something. Do you have any idea?
Oh, it is. Absolutely. Yeah. It is about he lived for his art, and his art was murder. That's the tagline.
That's classic.
I think it's like $3 or $5. It's not much over there at the screening room, and it's a good time celebrating the work of Roger Corman. It's hosted by someone named Miss Baltimore Bombshell. So what more could you ask for from an event from that?
Baltimore Bombshell. Okay. Yeah, that's great.
You got time for one more? How much time do you got?
Yeah, I've got a little more time.
Okay, great. Okay, so in things that I'm finding sort of weirdly fascinating this week, the swap meet, the Tinkerbury swap meet, yes, is having a music festival on Saturday.
Oh, wow.
From 11 a.m. to 11 p.m.
Wow.
They have 4 stages, 15 bands, 20 food trucks, obviously the unique shopping experience of the swap meet itself.
Right.
It is an all-ages event, and it says on the thing, good times. So I think that's a promise,
not a threat, I think.
Yeah.
So this is not your Nana and Tata's swap meet. I mean, if they're having a music festival, my goodness, that's not buying funny trinkets or whatever.
No, you can do both, I think. But 12 and under are free. It's only, all you have to do is pay the regular admission to the swap meet, which is $3. No ticket sales, no passes. Just go through the entrance. Uh-huh. Have a great time, including Techno Banda El Montiel and Grupo Impacto. So solid lineup there at the swap meet on Saturday.
We have a couple more seconds. They also, correct me if I'm wrong, have they opened that new food truck venue there?
Yeah, Comida Hall. They have like 15 to 20 food trucks all the time. It says they'll have like over 20 for that event.
Well, thank you, Dan. I appreciate it. That's Weekend Watch host Dan Gibson. This is the Bill Buckmaster Show, broadcasting from the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studio. It's produced by Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC.